Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to a special edition of Saturday Morning with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Thank you. This is a special edition because I love this actress. She's on one of my favorite shows on Showtime, The Side. She plays a mom. She has two kids. We'll talk about them. But besides that, this woman is so multi-talented. She is all over Chicago in a variety of theaters. She has won a major award. We'll talk about that. And good evening, Tyler Abercrombie.
Good evening. How are you, Joy? And thank you for having me.
I am well. I'm happy that you're here with me. I'm glad that you're not sick with COVID.
Oh, God, yes. Nobody. So how is COVID? I wish no one has that.
I know. How has it impacted you this last year, this COVID drama?
Oh, my God. I guess to begin with, it's impacting me the way it did everyone, this idea of just being sat down and pushed inside and constantly worrying about, you know, am I going to get it? Do I have it? You know, that paranoia that you have. It also, though, made me, it made me appreciate sitting down. When you don't have to sit down, you know, you run around and you drive yourself crazy trying to do everything and all things. But when you have no place to go and there's nothing open for you to do and you really take stock of your life. And I think that it gave me that opportunity, which I really appreciated. And it it just made me appreciate small things a lot more. And I've continued that even as we start to open up and feel more free, because it was, and that was rewarding to learn that you, you've been overlooking some things, or I should say taking for granted some things. And then, of course, not working for a year made you feel like, okay, I like a vacation, but this is too long, you know?
I can imagine. So you haven't worked at all this past year?
I didn't start working until January 29th of 2021. My last day of work was March 1st, and I did a play called Sweat by, oh, my God, if she would die. Three deaths, like, how dare you not remember my name, by Lynn Norton. Okay, like, how do I, Lynn is brilliant, how can I not say her name? But I did Sweat at Huntington Stages in Boston. That shut down March 1st. I came home March 2nd, and I didn't work again until January 29th of 21. That's
you
a
know,
lot.
I was reading that one of your cast members on that show was actually sick, but this was before the whole COVID thing broke. Now, if we found out somebody had those symptoms, we'd be like freaking out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember my first day back to work. I was, you know, I'm real close to a hypochondriac. I always tell everybody that, and anyone that knows me well knows that. And so I was like, oh, you know, please don't let me have these reflexes, you know, like someone gets too close to you and you just automatically like jump because you've had this year of being 6 feet apart and whatever. And it took a week or so for me to start feeling like, okay, there's protocol in place and everyone's doing their due diligence. And so I can feel, I say relaxed, but not relaxed to the point of not doing what I'm supposed to do, but not being so panicked. You know?
Yeah. Well, now you have been on Chicago PD, Chicago Med, Proven Innocent, Girlfriend Experience. How did you get this role as the mom on The Shy on Showtime?
Well, you know, I auditioned for this role, but apparently the pilot had been shot. I didn't know anything about the pilot. I didn't know much about The Shy. And it came back around where they were doing some recasting for the pilot and were going to reshoot it. And I was lucky enough to get called in for that round. And I remember going into the casting directors, Cargi and Ross, and I had auditioned, but I had also said to Melissa, you know, I, at that point, was saying, you know, I'm looking to get media roles. I go in, I play, I've been guest stars on many things. I've done 2-3 episodes, recurring character, but I wanted something with some texture. And I thought, I know you're not supposed to ask the casting director that, but, you know, Chicago's a small community, so just don't put it out there. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
And so I said to her, you know, because they only sent you the sides, and which are the material that you are auditioning for only. And I didn't know much about the story. And I said to her, well, yeah, you know, I don't know much about this role, but I'm really looking to try to start going out for, you know, things that are have more trajectory. Do you have any advice for me? And she looked at me and she kind of answered with a little bite, you know, and I thought, okay, well, I just ruined that opportunity. But her point was, this is a good role. This is that kind of a role. This you're the mother of the, you know, the son of Moonlight, and you're the mother of something. I was like, oh, okay. And so I went from there, and I got called back in for the callback, and then I booked it. So it was really, I think sometimes, you know, that saying, ignorance is bliss. I didn't walk in with any preconceived notions. I wasn't nervous in the sense of beyond what you are just out auditioning. And I didn't have this idea of who this mom was. I read the sides. I took every mama I know, including my own, my sisters, my friends. And I just went in there, and, you know, I always say, I go in my auditions and try to drop the mic. I got no control after that, you know?
Well, you definitely dropped the mic several times in many episodes on The Chi.
Thank you.
Just want to let people know. The new season starts May 23rd. It's 9 p.m. Eastern on Showtime. This is season 4. Wow, you know, you're the tough mom. Your kids, Keisha and Kevin, and you're the tough mom, and Kevin is always trying to sneak around doing something. But Keisha's had some crazy experiences. One of them was the kidnapping, when she was kidnapped. I mean,
yeah,
I was on the edge of my seat on those. I was every episode. I was like, y'all got to find her. Y'all don't, please don't do this one. Don't do it. Don't do it. I can't take it. What was happening? Did you know the end result? Did they tell you, or you didn't know what was going to happen at the end, that she was going to be found or not found?
We had no idea how the end would unfold. We don't get the episodes too far in advance to avoid that. And that's good because, you know, you read an episode at the end of the week of shooting one episode, and you're like, oh, my God. You know, you're like, wow, that's going to happen. So there, you get surprised as well. And yeah, you know, playing this mother of Keisha and Kevin, Alex Hebert and Burgundy Baker, I have no kids of my own. I have a fur baby. But I instantly, and this is a credit to the early stages of the writing, is that I instantly became mama bear over these young people. You know what I mean? And I really felt this attachment to them and protection that these are my kids, you know what I mean? And I think that's also just part of being the type of actor that I am. I know what my role is and I do the research for it and I show up kind of like, I just feel I've embodied the character by the time I get there. And last season, I had no reference points for what Keisha went through. You know what I'm saying? I had no, you know, I don't have So all I could, after doing the research, I did do because I wanted to know what, how people dealt with that when their kids just come up missing and they just disappear and police aren't giving you any help and the community's, you know, trying to do what they can. But, and so I did my fair share of research, but it was really honest, emotional journey of going through that, you know.
And I'm going to tell you, as a mom, that's my daughter, she you know, she's grown and everything. She lives in a different city and all kinds. And I tell you, you know, when they say no matter how old your child gets, you're still concerned about them, you know, you hear that type of thing. But let me tell you, it really is. Like, she'll tell me, oh, I was just walking the dog or something, and it'll be like 9:30, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Where are you? You know, I'm like, do you have mace? And she's like, Mom. I'm like, well, carry a little knife, something. Damn, you know, you're just walking around and this and other, and then we just had a whole big battle about the Mace Karen. But anyway, this issue of trauma, though, with Black kids, Black families dealing with trauma, and your character even had trauma. You know, she talks about, it came out about her trauma and what happened to her. Mm-hmm. You know, how have you dealt with trauma in your life? Like, have you had some kind of traumatic experience that's happened, and what did you do to come back to center?
Well, you know, I grew up, I am a Chicagoan. I grew up on the West Side in the Austin community. And that was really, and we were a poor family. I always say we were financially poor because we weren't poor of spirit and mind and body, but we had no money. We were on public assistance. And and that was a very difficult time growing up. I mean, you know, when you're a kid and you're told, you hear your mother kind of worrying about it. She was a single mother, worrying about a five-day notice on the door. You know, as a kid, you think we're going to be put out in 5 days. You don't know the whole legal thing they have to go through before they can actually put you on the street. And so
right,
I had those
right.
kind of thoughts often. I've always been like a sort of a loner because of feeling ashamed of my own poverty and financial poverty. I must indicate that because I do think that person doesn't have money with this somewhere there, the lack of intelligence or the lack of human spirit and all of that. So I always indicate the difference because it's so not true. But, and I grew up in an area where men would grab at me. You know, I got my height and I developed early. And so they would grab and touch me and smack me on the butt and, you know, squeeze me. And I mean, I was a kid. You know, I might be 12,
yeah.
I was a child. And so for a very long time, I felt having a body that men considered attractive was a curse. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Wear baggy clothes
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing. And so I never had the type of trauma, thank God, of a rape or molestation or definitely nothing like Keisha experienced with being kidnapped. But still, the objectifying of my young body made me a very cautious woman, a very afraid woman for a while, until I literally took psychology classes in at university and began to study and see and feel how the mind worked. And it made me, I don't know how, I think because I took like human sexuality and behavior and things of that nature, that somehow it gave me a power to understand what these people were trying to do to me. And and I feel like I took the extreme approach of being very defensive. So it was important that people didn't think I was cute and sexy, but that I was smart, you know, and
yes,
everyone
yes,
had to know
it,
I was smart. But,
you know,
so I thought that I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
I just felt that I came out of on the other side of it by really learning how to love myself more than I loved or appreciated the love of others. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you have to love more yourself more because nobody else can love you better other than yourself.
Exactly.
And also, you can't tell people what you need if you don't know how to love yourself. You see, you'll accept
very
anything,
true.
You know, and that sometimes takes time to learn. Like, you know, you were learning. I think that's an issue with people, but particularly like we're talking about this objectification of women and young girls and things that young girls go through that may be sometimes
mm-hmm.
unspoken. Like, well, that's just the way it is. You know,
right.
That's just the way it is. Well, you know, you got it's your fault. Meaning, like, well, you got the butt and you got your chest. What do you expect is going to
yeah.
happen? Da da da. You know, it's like when somebody gets raped, well, you know, why was she wearing this short skirt? What the hell? What does that have to do with it? You know?
We dealt with that during the show, you know, people suggesting that because she was so-called fast or because she dressed provocatively, that it gave a man a right to snatch her up or mistreat her. And we, you know, this thing of teaching women to travel in pairs and you know, be careful of this guy, but not teaching young men, you don't have a right to this person. You don't have a right to this young lady's body or to touch them in a way that's inappropriate. We don't want to teach young men that. I mean, we're trying to go into that now, that awareness of you know, the Me Too movement and Time's Up movement and things of that nature. But for years as women, and still to this day, we are, for me to say that you've done something to me inappropriately, I'm automatically guilty because of what I wore or what, you know, how I was presenting or what did I expect. And I just think that's so crazy. And with the, my father was absent. And as a young woman, that is such a significant character in your life. I mean, for young men too, but you learn about men through the male examples you have. And so
you
go through that period. Yeah, you go through that period of trying to, you know, the worst thing, I even said this to my sister, even though she has boys, I said the worst thing you can ever do is let a man teach a young girl about her body or a boy teach a girl about her body. You know what I mean? So you have to tell your children things and talk to them and let them know that what they feel is okay and their body is changing and they don't have to do anything they don't want to do. It's really important.
No, definitely. It's funny because the weirdest thing is my dad, well, my parents are very open in terms of talking to me about all different types of subjects. They talked to me about sex. They gave me the book. I still have the book. I gave it to my daughter. My brother's read it. It's been passed down. But one of the things my stepfather had actually talked with me about contraception. When I talk about it as an adult, I realize how like crazy that is. Of course, it was extremely uncomfortable, but he used to work with kids at a detention center, so he was, I guess, probably more aware, like, these are things that she's probably going to have to come up against. Let me just have this conversation with her. But it still was odd for him as opposed to my mom. But my mom had other conversations, you know, with me. So it's really important. One of the issues that you guys deal with, your character, Nina, is that she gets married on the show, and she doesn't get married to a man. She gets married to a woman.
Yes.
So that was something, you know, groundbreaking, I think, for TV. It's become more acceptable to see the queer movement on TV and be accepting. I think the kids on the show, you know, they're like, okay, let's say mom, you know. How did you feel about portraying the queer character? I don't know if you're queer, so I don't want to make any assumptions. How did your family?
Well, I was excited. I remember when I read the role, like I said, those thighs, and I was like, this sounds cool. That sounds great. But I just didn't know how important she was to the story. But then once I did get the script and I had the opportunity to sit at the table read, I remember saying to Lena Waithe, I've only met her a couple of times, but in those couple of times, I made sure that I expressed to her how I thought this character was not on television anywhere. I mean, we've seen our lesbian couples, but they're always rather affluent, and they have the beautiful homes with the great views and the blonde wood floors and the luxury cars and their white partner and, you know, their brown child, and they're just this great family, and there's nothing wrong with that. But this woman who is just in the inner city with her two kids, there wasn't one. I didn't see this person anywhere, and I thought this is great. Because we forget that these people are in our communities and living life just like most of us, right? And so I was very excited about it. My siblings, my mother passed away in 2013, so she didn't get to see this, but my siblings were very much like, okay, great, until love scenes happened, and then they were like, oh, mercy, you know, that kind of thing, because... You know, so I always try to tell them in advance, so they'd be like, I'm not ready. I'm just not ready. But I was very, and I am still very happy to portray this character. I think that it's such an important character, and Nina's fight for her children and her relationship and getting married and just trying to live a happy life like everybody else in the world. And yet being met with all of these adversities, you know, is really what it's about. And I just think that I don't think about the fact that she is a lesbian. I just, that she's a woman and this is her love and these are her children. Because I personally believe with my friends that are in same-sex relationships that they're not walking around all day thinking about that until someone wants to make a big deal of it. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Just like, you don't wake up every morning thinking I'm black until I walk out in the street and then some negative thing or I'm at work or some microaggression happens.
Absolutely.
And then I'm like, oh, here we go.
You're absolutely right. It's out there every single day. But when you wake up, you're just waking up ready to do what you got to do. What's on the to-do list? And then you come up against these attitudes or situations. But, yeah, I really embrace the character. I really appreciate who and what she represents in society. And, I'm always hopeful that I'm doing a good job at it.
I think you guys are doing a great job. And I like the fact, like you were talking about, they're not rich and affluent. They don't have their picket fence. They don't have, the completely, done hardwood floors. They're just regular folk. And that is important to see on TV because people are not represented in terms of class. Every class has gay people. Every class has, this, that, and the other. So it needs to be represented. And also there may be somebody out there who's like, they remind me of me, that's
right.
Me. And they can, relate. And they're happy to see that because maybe they don't ever see that on TV, So I think I love your relationship. I love the trauma and the drama and your partner, Dre trying to help you with the kids and you fighting back. I mean, that's the same thing that would happen in a heterosexual. It's a new relationship, and it has these growing pains.
Right. It has growing pains. She's coming into last year. She came into the fold with kids that were 14 and 17. And so you are, I joke like you're showing up at the party with the bag of ice when the whole, the cake's been served. So they're already ready and their personalities are formed and they know who they are. And you're like, I'm your new mom. I'm here to help raise you. And it's like, you can't raise me. I'm already, I'm already grown kind of thing. But she leans into that. And she doesn't, she's not afraid to be liked or disliked by the kids because she's like, I love your mom. I love you. We're a family. And she just attacks that,
Right, right. Well, let's talk about the fact that you are the inaugural recipient of the Northside Raven Theater $25,000 New Play Initiative. Tell the audience about that. How did that happen? What does that mean?
Thank you, first of all, for celebrating with me with that. I am so proud of that achievement tremendously because I love theater and it just is part of my heartbeat. I realized that during COVID how much I missed it. So that came about because I had already been planning to do some work at Raven Theater. I had directed a stage reading and I was in conversation with Cody Estes, who's the artistic director, about working up there and looking for a play and directing something up there. So we had already started to form our relationship. And so when this opportunity came around, I actually had talked to Cody about using him as one of the theaters I wanted to work with as I pursued different types of grants. Well, the grant that I pursued, I did not get. And Cody was so anxious. He would call me almost every few days to say, hey, have you heard? Have you heard? And I was like, not yet. And so then once they turned me down, he called me and he's like, good. I'm glad that's finally over. We want to offer you this. And it was just like, the gift you did not see coming at all.
Wow.
So
okay.
I know, right? He was, and what he explained was we had talked about a writing initiative with Raven Theater. They're a great Northside Theater. I love the work that they do. Cody had come to see the reading of my newest work at that time, which was Relentless over at Timeline Theater, and we kind of started communicating after that. And so once he knew that I was interested in this relationship and he was very interested, he said the wheels had been turning for him from that moment. And so when the opportunity presented itself, because he didn't know, he had no idea I was going to say, hey, I'm going to do some grant filling, fill out some grants and can I use your name? And I'd love to work with your theater. So that wasn't even in his mind. Mm-hmm. But he said he was great. He was happy to hear it because here from that one discussion, he talked to some of his board members and they were like, yeah, let's do it. And so I was excited. I did not expect to get this grant, and I am so excited about this initiative. I think it's going to be wonderful for Chicago.
Now, is this connected to the last pair of earlies? Is that what this is connected to? Or
yes,
another...
and that was actually, no, it's not. I'm going to direct the last pair of earlies. The last pair of earlies is actually written by Joshua Allen. And Joshua is also a television writer. In fact, he wrote on Empire. He was a playwright as well. And so Cody and I had already kind of come to a point where we were like thinking about this play and should we do this play? And, you know, we both kind of felt a certain way about it. And so the last pair of earlies I will be directing this fall. In fact, now that theaters are going to start opening back up, which is amazing and wonderful. I know, right? So that's going to be the first theater project that I get right back into. Is the last pair of earlies at Raven Theater in the fall. But that's separate from my award. My award is about me creating a play, writing a play for Raven Theater specifically that they will produce and will become just, you know, something I think extraordinary.
How do you have time to balance this, getting grants, writing, and then doing the show? You like wake up in the middle of the night and have an idea and scratch it on the pad, or you're walking around with the iPad while you're shooting the show? I mean, what's the deal?
I actually do walk around and use the mic on my phone a lot. I record play ideas. I have this running list of play ideas, and I have moments happen sometimes in the day, and I'm like, oh, this would be great dialogue for this character. You know, I just thought of something, and I thought, oh, this is how this dialogue is going to go. Because, you know, any writer will tell you, your characters speak to you when they feel like it. You know, you don't really necessarily get to be like, oh, I'm ready to write your thoughts. No, you might have a moment that's like, oh, wow, I can really feel this character right now. So I do that. And I am a night owl, so everyone that knows me knows, one, do not call me before 10 a.m. because I'm just not going to converse with you, because I probably didn't go to bed until about 5 a.m. because I'm a night I'm a night owl. I get my juices flowing at about 8, 9 o'clock at night, and I can be up till 5 in the morning. So my emails, and in fact, my email to you came about 2:30 in the morning. Because I'm up typing things, and I'll see something. I said I was researching for our talk today, and I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't send her the information. So I usually am up really late at night, and I'm usually writing between days I'm off. The good thing about the Shy is we're off on the weekends, so I can at least write during the weekends. And then I am, like a lot of writers, pressed because I, you know, have to finish my first draft for – two projects, actually. So that's really what May is about. Yeah.
So now you said you have a fur baby. What kind of fur baby do you have?
A Yorkshire Terrier named Toby.
And how old are they?
I only have one now. I used to have two. Toby is 12. And I used to have Buffy. Buffy passed away in May 2019. But Toby is 12 years old. I've had her since she was 7.5 weeks. The other one was a rescue, but I had her for 10 years before she passed away.
Wow. So now do you have somebody walk the dog, or are you able to take the dog on set? How does that work?
I usually, Toby's so trained. I mean, she's been with me for so long. She's gone through tech during theater, and tech on a theater show is crazy. And she stayed all over, you know, the country in different cities, you know, and states. And so she has a, you know, she's trained. But I do take her.
Temperament.
If I have an early call, if I have an early call, I take her with me, especially if it's going to be, I can look at what our call is that day or what we're going to be working on. And I think, oh, I'm going to be here all day. It's going to be a long day. Then I take her, but she stays in my trailer And on my breaks, I take her out to walk. I don't take her on set because I don't want anyone else having to be responsible for my pet. And I don't want her, you know, being in anybody else's way. So she usually comes with me. She stays in my trailer. I walk her on breaks. Everybody knows her and they play with her and, you know, they, you know, really like her, you know, and some people are like, if you bring your dog, let me know. We'll keep her, you know, so it's pretty cool.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on this evening. Again, I want to mention to people that this is the season 4 coming up May 23rd of The Chi on Showtime, 9 p.m. Eastern. We can't wait. Can you give us any hints about something Nina's going to go through this season, maybe?
Ooh, any hints what Nina's going to go through? Nina is going to go through hell and high water to make sure her children are safe. That's about it.
Okay, that's about it. Okay, Tyler, I got you. I see you. I see you.
Yes,
you almost got me there.
I set you up really good, right?
You did. You did. You set me up. But thank you, thank you, and thank you. I wish you so much success with your award and the new plays. I wish you, if you videotape them, maybe you can put them, like, online somewhere where people could see them.
Well, you know, a lot of theaters are having to do that now, you know, have a, where, you know, they have ticket sales, but they also have a streaming sale, so people will be able to see them online. And my other theater piece is Relentless, which that's the one we talked about earlier that was postponed last year, but we are going to be going into rehearsal for it this year, late in the year. So I'm back-to-back on projects. I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, keep me informed. Let me know. I would love to have you back on the show to talk about any of your projects. They sound so interesting. Thank you for calling in today, and, you know, please get some rest. Don't stay up till 5 o'clock in the morning.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I'm just getting off the phone here with Tyler Abercrombie. She plays Nina on The Chi. She plays Nina Williams. She's the mother of Tisha and Kevin. The Chi restarts May 23rd, 9 p.m. Eastern on Showtime. Please check them out. Follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. You can also email me, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. I give away a lot of stuff, books, tickets. Now that shows are opening up, you never know, I might be giving tickets to a show, CDs. So I encourage you to follow. You might be a winner. Everybody have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Every year, millions of Americans are exposed to a contagious virus.
What is this virus? It's stigma.
Stigma promotes an environment of shame,
fear, and silence,
which prevents millions of people from seeking help.
But there's good news.
The National Alliance on Mental Illness believes stigma towards mental illness is 100% curable.
So do yourself and everyone a favor.
Go to curestigma.org and get tested for stigma.